Welcome to Health Hats, learning on the journey towards best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, cisgender, old white man of privilege living in a food oasis who can afford many hats and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. I'm the Rosetta Stone of healthcare. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in the awesome circus of healthcare. Let's make some sense of all of this. One of my first gigs in my nursing career was working at the Detroit Rehabilitation Institute. I was working with a 30-year-old man with quadriplegia from a gunshot wound to his neck. We were practicing driving his motorized wheelchair with a mouth stick. Coming down the hall towards us was a 40-year-old man recovering from a severe stroke. He was learning to maneuver his wheelchair with his right hand and right foot. He tilted dramatically to his right, and he was drooling quite a bit. His very young wife, really dressed up, was following behind him. She looked bored and disgusted. Out of the corner of his mouth, the man with quadriplegia said, "Glad I'm not him." Everyone with a chronic illness has a different story. You really can't compare them. I have my challenges, you have yours. It's what we know. You've heard my rap, we manage or don't at any given moment with our constellation of genetics, conditions, circumstances, environment, and behaviors. It's special to meet someone in a gathering of 300-plus people with a motley assortment of chronic conditions. Lisa Deck and I met at that Healthy Voices conference in Dallas this year. We found ourselves across the table at a Society of Participatory Medicine meetup several months later. And then, last month, at PCORI's annual meeting, we took the opportunity to chat. Here's that conversation. Hi, Lisa.
Hello.
Thanks for joining me.
Thanks really for having me.
A week ago, we had a virtual picnic.
Yes.
I love the sound of that.
It sounds very exciting.
It does. Well, really what it was is we planned to meet for lunch, and your son wasn't feeling well.
Correct.
And so we decided instead of canceling, we would have a virtual picnic instead, and We chatted.
That
was great. So, Lisa, how do you introduce yourself at a social gathering?
Isn't that a million-dollar question? Often I will say that I'm Lisa Deck. I'm a four-time stroke survivor and a rare disease patient. I was misdiagnosed for many years, but I now survive two brain surgeries to correct Moyamoya disease. And taken out of work in my early 20s, I am disabled. However, I've become a passionate patient advocate for a variety of organizations. I run a nonprofit called Sisters at Heart. I also
Sisters at Heart.
Yes.
Okay.
And I have been a volunteer advocate and patient for the American Heart and American Stroke Association for almost two decades now.
Okay.
And I also now am involved in the rare disease space with Rare New England and speaking and sharing my story in a variety of different opportunities, I guess. I try to take advantage of sharing my story because I think it provides hope. And I'm learning even more and more, even here at PCORI and different events that make me recognize that as a patient, I have a wealth of experience I can share. And I'm learning that I have value and I can bring that value to a bunch of different situations.
Where were you when you first realized that health was fragile?
I had a random sledding accident when I was a junior in college.
Okay.
It was New Year's Eve day. I was visiting a friend up in Burlington, Vermont, and I went sledding. And unbeknownst to me, going down a hill, there was a ramp built in the hill, went off, came down in the sitting up position. So picture somebody sitting on a sled going up and landing straight down, and I broke my back.
Oh, goodness.
And that was the first major injury I had in my life.
Yeah.
And besides the pain and the, you know, recovery, which was about 3 months, I had to wear a brace that made me sit up straight and correct the problem in my back. It was a T12 compression fracture.
Oh, goodness. So that's pretty low.
Yes, it was pretty low. So it was kind of right at the bottom of your spinal column.
Okay.
All the health challenges, it was my first realization that my plans for life might not be what I wanted them to be. Because what that accident took away from me was my ability to study abroad in Spain. I was supposed to leave 5 days later to go study abroad. It had been a big decision for me to make that decision to go because I was not adventurous necessarily in leaving what I knew. Mm-hmm. So I had made the decision and it was taken away from me. That was my first mental exploration at overcoming a challenge.
Wow. Tell us about like four strokes. You're a young person.
I guess I still am.
You still are.
Interestingly enough, a year after my sledding accident, a little after, over a year, I suffered my first stroke. And that's when I really say my health journey started. But I do think my broken back helped prepare me for what was to come.
Okay.
Because
you were in your 20s?
I was 21 years old. I was about to graduate from college. It was a week before college graduation.
Okay.
And I had all the typical signs and symptoms of a stroke, but really didn't recognize that stroke could happen to young women who seemed healthy.
Yeah.
The first hospital sent me home. It was at the second hospital that they diagnosed me with the stroke. And that's only because I was proactive and went back. The first one just sent me home and I decided I was in too much pain. I had all the symptoms. Again, I didn't know what it was and it was shocking to find out it was a stroke. I did lose some movement in my hand at that point. I eventually gained it back with OT. Mm-hmm. 6 months later,
occupational therapy.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
It's okay.
And 6 months later or so, I suffered a second stroke.
6 months later.
Mm-hmm. I was on my first day at a client site at a job. The same symptoms happened, went in, and the doctors admitted me for about 3 weeks to find out what was going on. And at the time, they diagnosed me with central nervous system vasculitis.
Okay. Central nervous system vasculitis is among a family of rare disorders characterized by inflammation of the blood vessels, which restrict blood flow and damage vital organs and tissues. It's a serious condition and can block the vessels that supply the brain and spinal cord, causing potential life-threatening complications such as loss of brain function or stroke.
The treatment for this was intense. As they said, it was a full court press. So I was 22 years old and was undergoing chemotherapy, prednisone, and blood thinners, all in an attempt to stop the strokes. Over the course of those years, the side effects were plentiful. I had a third stroke and the doctors took me out of work. And that was a huge disappointment for somebody who always had a plan.
Yeah.
My plans were gone.
So what kind of work were you doing?
I was in IT consulting, so I didn't necessarily know exactly what I wanted to do, but I had always worked hard at being a good student and achieving and having the hopes of making a difference. Accidentally, I found a way to make a difference, but it wasn't the plan that I had. After my third stroke, I eventually was in declared remission of that disease. Personally, my life went on. I became a volunteer with the Heart Association. I sort of was looking for other patients, other people to help me figure out what was going on. That is what I did with the Heart and Stroke Association. I eventually was married. We grew to a family of four and eventually moved out of the DC area back up to New England. At this point, I had a really wonderful opportunity with the American Heart Association. I was selected to be a national spokeswoman.
Okay.
And that was an opportunity to take my story and share it nationally.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually bringing the story of stroke. So it was changing the perception of stroke in that if you look at me, I just look like a young woman, and you don't see a deficit. There isn't a physical deficit. Mm-hmm. I now can use the term invisible illness, but it was a way to show people that stroke can happen to anybody, not just the elderly. I was really excited about this opportunity, and I started a website, and I was really going, and I had a fourth stroke.
Oh.
And now this was a different opportunity, a different situation, because I have two young children at this time. I was 39 years old, and suddenly I was a mom. And while it was about me, it wasn't as much about me as it was my children.
Yes.
The doctors, after the fourth stroke, diagnosed me correctly with Moyamoya disease. All those years, I think it had been an incorrect diagnosis. Okay. And Moyamoya is a rare cerebrovascular disease that causes narrowing of the middle cerebral artery and causes strokes and seizures. All this time, that's what was happening to me, but we didn't know that.
Right.
I was very happy to have the correct diagnosis, but then I heard the bad news. There is no cure, and there is treatment. I soon learned that I would need not one, but two brain surgeries. And in doing the research, and now I had become more of a engaged, educated patient, I decided if I was going to have brain surgery, I wanted to go to the best neurosurgeon for Moyamoya disease. And in my research, that took me across the country. So I had to leave my family and my children for about a month to go have these two brain surgeries. Fortunately, I have supportive family, supportive community, and looking back, it all went as well as it could. But as you can imagine, brain surgery is challenging, painful. I lost my speech for a while. I had nausea, pain, fatigue, bruising, you know, all of the typical stroke pieces. But I'm happy to say the surgeries were successful.
Okay.
And they increased my blood flow 7 times to what it was. So my husband thought I might become a superhero. I have not yet. But I did go home, and I think for probably about 2 years, it was a lot of mental and emotional healing I had to do.
Yes.
I think it all happened so fast, and I was focused on my children, not on me.
Yes.
I was, how do we make this okay for them? How do we do that? And we did. But then there was a lot of that PTSD, looking back, what could have been, what could have happened, and a lot of soul searching. And now I, it's been 4 years since my surgeries, and I'm happy that I am doing much better. Now I'm even more fully committed to giving back and helping others because I can.
Yes. Wow. Boy, there's a lot in there. Talk a little bit more about being an engaged patient. That's such a big term, and there, it seems like there's so many pieces to that. So when you're saying you were talking about doing the research to find the right surgeon and the right treatment, so that was one part of engagement that you mentioned. So how else do you think about that, both as a patient and as a advocate?
I think I want to take you back to the beginning of my story when I was a 21-year-old whose left side went numb and I had a terrible headache, and I'm in the basement of my apartment calling my parents saying, what do I do? And they told me to go to a hospital.
Right.
And that hospital sent me home.
Yeah.
And for context, and this doesn't really matter except I was graduating. I had a job set up for that September. I was graduating magna cum laude. There was no stress left. I had one or two exams, but they didn't really matter. I was a very good kid going in to this doctor, and I think they looked at me as a college kid partying, and they were pretty convinced that I was doing drugs. I told them I wasn't. Well, you know what I could have said, and this occurred to me years later, do a drug test.
Yeah.
Test me. But I was an innocent kid. I had no idea to do that.
Yes.
So fast forward 20 years where I have been working with doctors and working with hospitals and insurance. And as you know, if you're a patient, you become an expert in these things. When I now had this new stroke and new possibility of how to treat it, I knew what to do.
Yeah.
And I knew the questions to ask. I also knew that I couldn't just make a decision. I had to talk to my insurance. So not only did I have the technical skills to go through and talk to insurance, know what it was like to get second opinions, I also had known as a patient what I needed to do, and I now was able to accept help because in my early 20s, I can do this. I got this, and I was very pigheaded, and I don't think you know it until you learn.
Yeah.
So I think now I can help other patients. I tell people, accept the help, or write down what you want, or have somebody come with you and take notes. So it's not only the technical piece, it's how do you navigate your emotional experience as a patient to make it the best for you? Somebody was telling me the other day, you know, the minute you hear that diagnosis, you don't remember anything. So bring somebody with you. So it's the big things and it's the little things. I guess that's what you learn in time. I don't wish for anybody to be a patient, but as you go, you learn a lot more.
Yes.
And that can help others.
Yes. There's the engaged of the research. There's the engaged of speaking up for yourself.
Absolutely.
There's the engaged of asking for help. In my advocacy now, my frame is being the CEO of your health, being the CEO of your health team. A good CEO doesn't do everything. You know, the CEO has a team. The CEO knows when to delegate. The CEO knows that she doesn't have to make all the decisions.
My multiple sclerosis is progressing very slowly, but it's progressing. My neurologist prescribed an infusion twice a year that cost $100,000 a dose. Yikes. I asked my neurologist if I needed it. I understood every word he said, but my brain couldn't put all the words together. Thankfully, I had my Abridge recording app turned on. I had pushed the big pink button. When I went home, my wife and I listened to the transcription several times. I'm grateful that we could take the time to make an informed decision. Thank you, Abridge. Abridge was created by patients, doctors, and caregivers. Check out the app at abridge.com or download it on the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Record your healthcare conversations. Let me know how it went.
So you're a mom, you have two kids. How have you introduced them to health and wellness, health and illness?
So it's interesting because, as I mentioned, my story began before them. What I held on to and who I became was a stroke survivor. And I was very proud of that title because I think I didn't have a job in the typical sense, but I was a very active volunteer. That is who I always was. And I was very open with my story because I think it provides hope to people. I also think that that's a way for me to connect to people, to other patients. So it was never a secret that I was a volunteer and a survivor. With the Heart and Stroke Association, both my children have been to many events. So they always knew that mommy had had strokes. They didn't know what strokes meant, but they knew that. When I went into the hospital for the fourth stroke, I debated, should they come in? Should they come see me? Because my side was numb. I still looked fine, but I was concerned. And it's interesting because they came in and I said, I said, you know, I've had these before. I said, they're very serious, but I'm okay. We're going to figure this out. But it was a whole new perspective because at the time they were 6 and 8, which when I look back, I mean, that's little. They're little. They don't understand. So my husband and I together figured out what they could know and what they couldn't know. And I look back and we did hold some things from them, but we didn't hold most of it. I mean, the primary thing we had to tell them was I'm going to California for a month and you're not going to see mommy and daddy for 1 month. And that is hard to tell little kids. And so that was all I was concerned about. That's not getting to your point, but that of all of it, even when I speak, I talk about that. I don't even talk about the surgeries. The surgeries were terrible and hard, but the piece that was the most difficult was leaving and hoping they were okay. But in talking about that, since then, wellness and illness have become a huge part. They know that now it's so critical. And it's always been critical, but I need to be well. And they know sometimes mommy has to rest. I noticed earlier you had a pin that says, I love naps or something to
that.
I'm good at naps. I'm very good at naps as well. And I think my kids, we joke about it, but they know sometimes mommy just needs to rest. They know that I'm always telling them we should exercise, we should walk, we should do things to be healthy. My kids are involved in many things. They have not found one activity that is their huge passion, but throughout the year, they need to do something that they move. And so they know that that is all part of health and wellness. It's not just going to the doctor and making sure you're okay. It's living that lifestyle. And I also think they are aware of how much work it can take to manage my health care. Mm-hmm. So they see that, you know, I'll be on the phone with insurance and then I come and I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't figure this out. I mean, so they're aware of that. So mm-hmm. I think they do recognize how many pieces there are to being the CEO mm-hmm. of your healthcare. And I think what I try to teach them a lot is empowerment and confidence.
Okay.
Because
how do you do that?
I think that I just give them the ability to make decisions and to learn that they can do things. And I'm not great at it. I mean, you know,
when you
I do
say
my best.
Give them the ability, is it that something needs to happen so you could choose this or you could choose that, that they have choices and they're making choices about themselves? Or is it like pumping up their confidence that you can do it?
I think it's funny. I'm going to say a little bit. So yes to the first piece. Okay. Yes. I think it's giving them choices and then saying you're going to live with that choice. And yeah. You have the power to make that choice, and then that's what you do. I think the other piece that's interesting is I know that I have put my kids in situations where they weren't going to succeed. And I think learning to fail is okay.
Yes.
I don't love it because yeah. I like to win. I was an athlete back in my day and mm-hmm. I am competitive, but sometimes you have to learn how to fail. And I think that's what I've learned in life by my health problems.
Right.
So for my kids, there's certain things. And, you know, I say, it's okay. You don't have to win, but doing it, that provides the confidence. Even if they're not going to win or even if they're not going to succeed, you can still try. So I think that's what I try to teach them.
Yeah.
Who knows?
So now you've been through all this. Like, what a story. What does healthy look like to you?
It's interesting. I think I'm finally finding healthy. And as I mentioned with my emotional stability, I think it was really challenging for a couple of years. Mm. And I remember someone saying after surgery, a fellow Moya Moya patient, give yourself at least a year. I did. And even after the second year, I was still challenged. What I found most was my ability to manage stress was lower. Mm. So I was very overwhelmed. I was, you know, certain times I would just have these little breakdowns and these I turn into a puddle.
Yes.
And I think now I am doing well. I've taken charge of my physical health with the things I can control, which mm-hmm. are my eating well and mm-hmm. exercising yeah. and self-care. And I know self-care is all the rage, but I do yes. think taking care of myself.
Yeah.
And I apparently, like you, like to do many things and I like to learn. So I'm often saying yes to opportunities because I want to keep learning and I want to keep helping. But I'm finding there's times I have to say no and yeah. I have to set my boundaries.
Yes.
So healthy to me is maintaining that lifestyle where physically I'm able to be in good health, but really emotionally, having the connections with my family and friends and yes. having the things that excite me, like travel and reading and journaling, but also that downtime I need to take naps or to rest. So it's trying to kind of find that balance. I think that's what healthy means to me.
Okay. I find that for me, one of the most important things I think I've learned is to manage the manageable stress.
Absolutely. Right. Well, I think it's true because I think that's why when it goes back to my breaking my back, that still to this day is probably one of my biggest disappointments because that situation could not be recreated. I did go travel through Europe, mm-hmm. but it's not the same.
Yeah.
I look back to that. My strokes took away a profession, but you know what? I was able to find what I'm doing yeah. and that is satisfactory. But I think that having that perspective is great, but you still have to day by day and minute by minute, figure out how to remember that. Because as much as we have these huge things hanging over our heads that are chronic long-term illnesses, mm-hmm. you still have to not fight with your children or not, you know, you still have right. to parent. You still have to figure out how to pay your bills. I mean, there's still right. all of those things.
Yeah.
And I found that when I was really sick at the time too, people so didn't want to bother me with menial menial, what they considered silly things. I was like, please tell me about the latest problem because I am sick of thinking about my problems. I'd rather just talk.
That's
another piece of advice I give to somebody. Somebody in my town just recently was diagnosed with an illness, and I reached out to her and I said, I have a couple pieces of advice and you don't have to listen, but they're things I've learned. And that's what one of them is, don't shut yourself in. Don't let your friends not talk to you about their stuff, because that's important, because that's what life is. So it is challenging, but
dealing with the chronic illness, with your strokes, having all this experience with the healthcare system is often an infuriating and crazy making shit show. And one of the things that I have found talking to people is that, well, really, at Healthy Voices, the best part of Healthy Voices was the talent night, where people were making light of their many disasters. And we were in, I was in stitches.
Absolutely. Ditto.
Not only was I in stitches, it was, you know, that laughing so hard where you're it's just so cleansing. Clearly, when you're in the middle of stuff, it's, you know, you just want to kill somebody. But it's, you can't really enjoy it until afterwards. What kind of experience have you had that was so absurd that at the time just was infuriating, but since has been, you know, one of those absurdities?
You know, I will tell you this story. One comes to mind, a very apparent one. And again, I look back and I was just naive. So back in 1997, at the second hospital where they were trying to diagnose me with the stroke, I was in pain, severe headache, and my whole side was numb. But the lights were too bright, sound was too loud. I had gone for a CAT scan and maybe an MRI. It's a little blurry. But I remember they said to us, we want to do a spinal tap. I didn't really know what that was. But I said, okay. Because again, I just do whatever they say. Mind you, I am 21. They said, okay, we're going to do a spinal tap. We have not the doctor, they're the, when you're resident, we have a resident who is going to perform this. Is that okay? Again, I don't know what a resident is. And I thought I was educated. I said, sure, no problem. Okay, so we're going to do a spinal tap. And if you don't know, a spinal tap is where they take a long needle and they put it into the bottom of your spine to extract fluid. And I think the idea was to determine if it was a stroke or not. There would be something indicating that. In my head, I didn't really understand this. So I am laying there, and my friend was there with me, a college friend. And so picture this. We're in this little room. We have to turn. I'm in a gown, but they have to expose my entire backside so they can get to this, the bottom of my spine. And my friend is kind of, and they say, oh, you might want to hold her hand. So I'm holding my friend's hand. Well, this resident proceeds to miss three times.
Oh, my God.
Well, they hit my spine, just not the right spot in my spine. So this pain was as much pain as I've probably felt. A huge needle going into your bone and missing and saying, oops, wrong place. Well, come to find out, this resident had never done a spinal tap. But so my bum is exposed, and there's a very handsome doctor there, and I become like a trucker. My mouth, the things that were coming out of my mouth were terrible, and I'm swearing, and I'm screaming, and yelling, and I'm saying terrible things because the pain is so horrible. Of course, this good-looking man is right there, and I don't care, and he's looking at my butt, and I look back, and it was terrible. It was crazy. Finally, I said, okay, enough. This isn't working. And then they eventually have, you know, a doctor do it who had experience in this, didn't hurt at all, one shot in, no problem. So I just look back on this silly time where I was swearing and my bum was showing and I'm very embarrassed. But I look back at the absurdity and I look back and say, how did I not say no to that?
Yes.
How did I not say no after the first miss?
Yes.
So I look back. There's so many lessons learned. Yes. But again, it was I'm embarrassed by the whole situation. Yeah. And I never saw those doctors or any of those people again, thank goodness. But I wonder if someday they'll ever appear and be like, I was that one, and I might punch them in the face. But yeah, so that's the absurdity. And so terrible at the time.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until years later you can look at it and laugh and say, wow, things
Thanks
I've learned.
For sharing that.
It's terrible, but it was a funny experience.
What should I be asking you that I'm not?
One thing that I ask myself is, what's next? It's interesting because coming to conferences like this and talking to you and talking to people, there's so much to be done. I want to tell other patients, you have power. I heard somebody say today that finally after 40 years, I was able to take and recognize that I had experience that other people needed. And I think that that is something that all patients don't recognize. You might not even realize it as you're going through it, but you have an inner strength and you're gaining knowledge and power that you can share. And I think healthcare today is changing. We have a voice and we have a need to share our voices, whether it be a personal story or whether it be with the healthcare system or through patient engagement. But one, you can be the CEO of your own healthcare and take care of yourself and those around you. But two, you can help make a difference. I think the collective power is there. That's what we're doing. And I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to do that, but I'm open and willing to be a part of it. So it's very exciting.
Great. Anything you'd like to ask me?
What do you enjoy sharing most with your podcasting audience?
That's a good question. I like discovering and sharing stories of hope and help. You know, when I was a direct care nurse, so I've been a nurse for 45 years, and I was a direct care nurse for 20, 25 years. And the part about being a nurse that I enjoyed the most was that it was legal for me to be nosy. And I was part of an intimate part of people's lives for a few minutes. I really enjoyed that. I felt like I was a guest in their life. And I was a translator and a connector. And I enjoyed that. And then with the MS, I really can't do that. But I feel like one of the things I really like about podcasting is, again, I have that, it's licensed to be nosy. I'm a guest in your life for a minute. And there's something about sharing these stories and what can we learn from each other so that in the next 5 minutes or your next experience, there's a seed there that you can draw on.
You know?
And I was listening to that podcast with Lisa Deck, and you know, she said, blah, blah, blah. It just stick in my mind, you know, and it gives them, if it gives somebody a moment of strength, or because my audience is clearly not only people who are see themselves as patients, it's you know, professionals, and you know, it's a nice thing about the health hats. But can they realize, you know, this, that we are the CEO of our health?
Right.
They are the guests in our lives. And have that moment of maybe realizing some of that. So
Neat. Yeah, I think the potential of collaboration and teamwork is huge. It's exciting that that's what it's coming to. And I think a podcast like this does that. It's, you know, not only are you asking for a story, but what have you learned? What are some of the things that work? What does that look like? And I think by having that conversation opens it up to other people. So thank you for having me. It's really exciting to be chatting.
Thank you. Yes. Thanks for joining me. This has been great.
Wonderful.
Yes. Thank you.
No problem.
Wow. Four strokes by age 39. Quite a record for a sportswoman. I hear a story about trust. First, no benefit of the doubt. By the first diagnosing person, thinking Lisa was a drugged out college student. And then Lisa's trust in herself as a patient expert. Experience and engagement reinforce each other and build confidence. No mystery that I appreciate I'm good at naps. My grandkids knew from day one. Opa, you need to rest, don't you? Yep, just closing my eyes for a few minutes. So far, I don't know how else to introduce young people to choices about health, wellness, or illness, other than including them when someone in their lives is actually making such choices. Lead by example. Also, no mystery that I appreciate Lisa's emphasis on telling her story. I'm delighted to be a channel for her. Follow my blog, podcasts, and resources through my website. See you around the block.